Hi, my name is Karis and I'm an addict. Right, one thing's for sure, my ego left me as soon as I saw many people sitting here, so it's just me. I'm very vulnerable. Just now I was asked, how long? And that question, it was a frequent question I asked in my addiction, how long? How long will you be? How long will it be? How long? And I thought she meant, how long is my show? And I realised she meant, how long is my clean time? Today, I'm happy and grateful to say I have 9 months and 12 days of clean time. First time ever in my life. How did I get here? Through pain, misery, sorrow, insanity of doing the same thing over and over all the time, day after day. I spoke to my sponsor as I sat down, and she said, Karis, and I said, there's so many people here. I said, Jennifer, I'm scared. And she said, my God, it sounds like a convention. And I said, it looks like a convention. So I share for the newcomer. I share cliches. I share war stories, because they're the things I needed to hear to get me to come back over and over and over again, to listen to the similarities and not the differences, and that's what I did. So, I'm Karis, I'm an addict. I know what makes me an addict, you know. I'm an extremist, you know. I'm controlling, I'm impatient, I'm self-centred. It's all about me. It's all about me. And I'm in fantasy a lot. You know, I did this all the way through my school. I was always looking out the window, fantasising about other things. Not school. Not school, you know, and I do that. You know, I was asked to do the chair on Tuesday, and last night, 3 hours out of my normal sleep pattern, I thought about the chair today and what I'd say, what I wouldn't say. If you're a newcomer, what I will suggest that you do is that you stay in the meeting, give it as much as all the time that you can, in fact, the whole meeting, sit down for the whole meeting, don't go outside and have a cigarette, don't be texting on the phone, because that will not save you. You know, every meeting I come to, I sit down, I give it my all. I go to the toilet before, I don't take a cigarette or anything like that, and my phone is on silent so that it will not interrupt me or distract me, because I'm easily distracted. That's all I have to say on that part. Anyway, I was grown up in a very kind of child, God-fearing household. My parents divorced when I was 4, and my mother's very strict, and soon enough I came to live with my father, you know, didn't like it there, so I left. I wanted things on my own terms, you know. Never misbehaved. I was always a person that I would take the arguments, and not the arguments, sorry, what my mother said to me, you know, and I conduct myself in that way. But I kept my feelings inside, you know. I was brought up to be seen and not to be heard. So therefore, I was able to adapt my feelings and my thinking into my own pattern, you know, not sharing with other people, because I wasn't supposed to do that. So I was born in Coventry, by the way, as well. So I'd left there, come to London, and I've always wanted to be in London, always wanted to be part of London, because I believed where the glamour was, and I liked how people spoke on EastEnders, you know, and that's the truth, you know. To tell you the honest truth, I was quite resentful about coming tonight because the soaps are on tonight, and that is the honest truth. But I'm glad I've come, because it's given me a wake-up call, you know. I'm always willing to give chairs for NA. I love NA, for what it's given me. I was pretty articulate, very, very... I was quite intelligent at school, but I chose not to use my intelligence, you know. I wanted to do things that would upset my father, so I went into hairdressing. He likes people to... Not saying that hairdressers are thick, sorry. That's not the case at all. But my father notes people by their academic qualities, so he wanted me to be a doctor or something like that, you know, and I I want to be rebellious. I want to be where the glamour was, you know. I wanted strange hours, you know, and I like that in hairdressing because you could start maybe 10 o'clock in the morning and you most outrageous, but it's hairdress, you know, hair and the dress sense, you know. And I lived with a great uncle until I then came to live by myself. This point now, I was going out, I was raving, was drinking. I didn't like alcohol. Even up to the last time I used alcohol, which was the 14th of September last year, still didn't like the taste of it, but I liked the effect it gave me. The effect it gave me is that I forgot pretty much very quickly about myself and who I was, you know. And I felt I was in control. I felt I was loved and I could be whoever I wanted to be, you know. Everything seemed to be a blur, my feelings, my vision, everything, you know. I didn't have to focus on anything. Hard and fast, anyway. Consequences came very quickly for me. My front two teeth, are caps, as I guess you can see. You can't see if you're hearing this, but yeah, they're caps. And I fell down after in the toilet, in the bathroom of a rave because I drank too much. You know, I was smoking marijuana and I wanted to be very hip like my friends. And I remember ending up face down on a concrete floor and I spat out what I believed was part of the concrete, and it was my teeth. And I still went back out the next week after seeing the dentist with all the pain, the tendons hurting and the pain, you know. I still went out and I drank after that. Yeah, drinking really to just be accepted. Yeah, that's what it was. Anyway, sure enough, I met different types of people because I went to very, very extreme places, Blue Shebeens, place my mother and my parents wouldn't have wanted me to go to. And I enjoyed myself there. And I remember one time working in the salon, two women came in with about space of a week, 2 weeks of each other. And everyone was just drawn to these two women, you know, very attractive, and I was too. I made a beeline for these women. You know, they were very glamorous, had two mobile phones. We're talking about the mid-90s now. And I liked them, you know, they had all the kind of talk, all the talk, and even like we had, like, launch parties, everyone make a beeline to them, you know, and you could see they had a bit of money. And I liked it, and it turned out that they were glorified pimps. They were madams, prostitutes, pimps, you know, and I liked that. I wanted to be different. I wanted to be powerful as well within that. And I thought that would be the answer to everything. You know, if I'm powerful, I can dress this way and everyone will make a beeline to me like they are with them, you know. Anyway, I did hairdressing less and less and I got into the world of prostitution. And I felt very loved. You know, my father, like I said, my parents were divorced when I was four. And I didn't really see my father so much. So I guess I lacked that love of a male figure in my life, and I believe through prostitution I could get that. So not in being accepted with prostitution, you know, okay, I'm in the world, but I'm not quite in the world because everyone's taking drugs now. A lot of the girls are taking drugs because you work very odd hours, and that's what I wanted, remember, you know. So I remember going out on bookings and cocaine was introduced and I saw it in the films. I liked the films, The Carlito's Way, The Goodfellas. That's what I was into at the time and I believed I could be the Sharon Stone maybe in Casino. And that's honestly what I thought, you know. So I went to great lengths to be with that person, you know, to belittle people, to have the matching shoes and handbag and the cocaine in the bag. And sure enough, you know, I was going to raves and I remember I was able to have like a rap over a weekend and all of a sudden that weekend would turn into Monday and Tuesday and I wasn't going to the raves because then I figured that instead of going to raves, I could spend that same money at home with alcohol, with maybe one friend who I don't know if I trusted them so much, but I knew I trusted the drugs. I could trust the drugs to take Karis out of being Karis and put me on a different place. Sure enough, I was introduced to crack cocaine, never liked it, made me very sick, you know, so I was going to Twice as Nice and all these garage and house and garage places, it's all very glamorous, you know, and people openly smoked it there, you know, openly smoked it there, and... didn't really like it. Tried it many times and wasn't to be part of because I was quite happy with Coke. And then it took me one time to be maybe the right time, the right place, I don't know, but it's meant to be, and pow. I thought I'd arrived. This is my Messiah. This is where I'm supposed to be, you know, and it just wiped everything away. It wasn't as gradual as cocaine. I lost a lot of weight, which made me more acceptable to get bookings, and it gave me a deluded sense of security, you know, a deluded sense of who I was. You know, at that time, it was like the 90s, you know, you see many, many skinny, very, very skinny people with eyes popping out their heads, walking very fast up and down the street. And it was quite an open thing at that time, you know, that, oh, my God, crackheads, you know. So I didn't want to be that person, you know. I didn't want to be it because if you take the word whore and the word brass, sorry, the word whore and the word crack, sorry, you put those two words together, you get the word crack whore. And that is what I didn't want to be because I wasn't that person. You know, and that's the honest truth. I'll make myself as vulnerable as I am, and I will tell them that's my truth. Yeah, I lost a lot of friends along the way, and then all of a sudden, suicide attempts were coming hard and fast. And first it was like an attention-seeking thing, and then it was, this is what I mean, I really mean this, you know, because there's no way out for me. I came into NA in 2000 through an ex-boyfriend, and I managed to spend 4 months clean. And I just went to one meeting a week, and didn't have a sponsor. And after 4 months, yeah, I went straight back out there. Under my own thinking, it's my own thinking that got me straight back out there. And I used well up until deluding myself that I didn't need NA, you know, that I can keep it under wraps. And people started to notice the difference with me, you know. I had very, very few people want to pick up the phone to me because I couldn't remember what I said to them the night before. And I was by myself. I remember I used to get black cabs from, say, someone like Park Lane. I remember this. I'd be giving all the chat and everything and saying, yeah, oh, this is what I do, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'll make them drop me outside a place, which is just around the corner from where I lived, a council estate, but around the corner, like a mansion block, and... You know, but run in, round the corner to, and this is like deluded thinking, round the corner to where I lived, you know, in this, yeah, deluding myself that because I just, where I just got in the cab, you know, was that this is who I was, some high flying I wasn't, you know. Anyway, I got exhausted. I began to get exhausted, and through my exhaustion, I started to cry, and I really reached out for help. And a friend of mine who was a hopeless addict, I would have said, who now runs a treatment centre down in Hampshire, and he said to me, Caris, get to a meeting. And I did, and they said about the jails institution's death thing, you know. 5 days later, I was sectioned at Charing Cross Hospital in West London, and that's when I became willing, you know. I went through detox, and I went through rehabilitation, 12-step rehabilitation in Bognor Regis, where people told me it's not only the crack wasn't the problem, it's also my lifestyle as well that actually aided me to fund my habit, you know. And I was in lots of conflict there, and I was told that if you're in conflict with other people, you're in conflict with your addiction too, yeah. And I came back out and I relapsed. And in the 2 weeks that I was using, when I came back out, I came to NA every single day. The next day afterwards, I still picked up the white keyring. And I'll say to any newcomer to do that, you know. I've got a great sponsor now who's just spoken to me on the phone. You know, I'm working steps, I'm on step four, you know. The obsession's wearing off. You know, I know my points, like what I'm doing, you know, like when I'm in fantasy and stuff, you know. I bought the literature, you know, I bought the blue book. I have the blue book. I highlighted that when I got home because that helped me get through the relapse. You know, I have the Just for Today book, the Green and Gold book, anything that will help me. You know, I've bought the DVDs, sorry, not the DVDs, the CDs. You know, so I can listen to it at home in case I can't make a meeting, in case my addict decides to wake me up in the middle of the night and said, Caris, do you know what? Do you fancy using? You know, I go to any length possible. Now that I'm in recovery, you know, I just want to leave you with this one thing, you know. I remember when I was in relapse in January and I was watching TV doing the same thing that I'd done before. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And this woman was talking on a documentary about oxytocin. And oxytocin is a chemical which is produced when mothers give birth to their babies. But it's also produced as well when we hug human beings, when we hug each other. It's a bonding chemical, natural bonding chemical, you know. And they have it right in a lot of ways. I don't know if they did the research about the oxytocin, but I tell you what, coming back here over and over again works, you know. It works and it keeps me clean, it keeps me sane for today. I know I've run out of time, but thank you everyone for listening. I'm Carrie Samantha.